Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on Edgewise today is Anthony Wilder Miller, Deputy Secretary of Education for the United States of America. His role is the equivalent of Chief Operating Officer for the department. Before joining the department, he had been an operating partner with a leading private investment firm, and he was an executive vice president of operations with LRN Corporation, which is a market-leading provider of governance and compliance software. He's also worked for Delco Electronics. Now, prior to his work in the private sector, he worked extensively with the Los Angeles Unified School District from 1997 to 2000, developing student achievement goals and strategies, and he was responsible for aligning budget and operating plans and designing metrics and processes for monitoring district-wide performance. Anthony, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you very much, Dave.
To begin with, the International Monetary Fund's Advanced Economy Countries report showed the U.S. ranked among the worst in student performance in math and rated it mediocre in science. Has the DOE studied other countries to see what can be done to transform this?
We do actually spend a lot of time trying to understand what are some of the practices our counterparts across the world are undertaking to improve education. I've traveled to Brazil, China, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, meeting with the ministries of education from those countries and understanding what they're doing. There are some striking things. First of all, you find some of the higher performing education systems, as measured by the OECD PISA results, for example, have what we call aligned instructional systems. They have clear and rigorous academic standards for the various content areas. The curriculum is then very much tailored to those standards. The teachers and the instructional leaders then are prepared to teach that curriculum against those standards, and they have the supporting materials and the right environment to do that well. So this whole notion of aligned instruction is a very powerful component of what they're doing well. And the other thing that's striking is that, especially in countries like South Korea or Finland, you see the investment in the quality of the teaching and the teacher and the educator workforce, where even in some cases at the expense of larger class sizes, their belief is if you really have a very effective teacher, that is a point of leverage, and I think that's something we can learn from.
Now, you've talked about alignment. Is that something that is common in U.S. schools?
Not enough. Unfortunately, we don't have consistently high academic standards. Standards appropriately are set at the state level, and when you actually do comparisons across 50 states, what you find is that they vary significantly in their rigor and how well, even if students were being taught against those standards equate to being prepared to be college and career ready, especially in a 21st century globally competitive world. Next, curriculums to differing degrees are more or less aligned. The preparation programs and the professional development of our teaching core change too frequently, so at any given time may not be 100% aligned, so you lack some consistency, and the materials are not always available in the classroom for students. You can imagine then if that's the environment, it's hard for teachers to do their best work and for us to deliver the results that some of these other countries are. So this notion of aligned instruction with high standards, with assessments that allow you to assess learning against those standards, with the preparation, the professional development, the curriculum, and all the support mechanisms is a critical part of what our education system needs to develop.
What area do you think in the United States is in the most need of improvement?
I wish it were as simple as there's one thing we need to do. Unfortunately, the education system is a very complex system. We need to have an aligned instructional system. We need to continue to improve the quality of teaching in every classroom. What's going to make that happen? First of all, we need to have higher academic standards. The good news here is that states are collaborating and are adopting higher academic standards. We have 41 states plus the District of Columbia who've already adopted college and career-ready standards in English, language, arts, and math, and they're moving forward with implementation. That will take the next couple of years, but we're making great progress on the standards. If you move to the next key component of alignment, assessing, we need to be doing much more assessment for learning instead of just assessment of learning. How, in fact, do we make sure that we are migrating away from assessments that simply measure basic knowledge to assessments that better represent what a student really knows and what a teacher has taught, and better represent not just the basic skills, but also critical thinking, problem-solving skills. The more robust type of test is what we need to move towards. We've got now 44 states funded by the Department of Education and comprised of two consortiums who are developing this next generation of tests. Federally funded, but the impetus is at the state level. Those 44 states represent 85% of the student population. The testing will be developed and piloted in the next 2 years, leading to mass rollout in the 2014 timeframe.
All right. Now, let's take a look at education in other countries. Is some of the dominance of these other countries due to a cultural respect for what education offers?
Absolutely. Context and cultural context matter a lot. What I discovered in places like China is the unique aspects of their context. There's historical context, this notion of examination and knowledge mastery in an examination, and then the associated development of the teaching profession to provide the skills and to support the examination. That goes back centuries with dynastic rule in China. So they are very good at examinations and examination preparation. You combine that with the more recent one-child policy. You only have a single child. You have two parents and then two sets of grandparents. You have significant focus of the nuclear family and the extended family on the well-being of that child. It's an emphasis on education. And if you couple that in the most recent environment with significant economic growth, people can see the tangible results where achieving high levels of education can lead to economic prosperity. That's a context that's very powerful and reinforcing.
That's interesting. But I'm just curious, do you have any other examples?
In South Korea, there's a similar context of economic growth and hyper-emphasis amongst parents on how they prepare their children. In an interview President Obama had with South Korean President Lee Myung-bak in Seoul last year, the question that our president asked was, what's the biggest challenge in education that you have? Interesting, he said, the biggest challenge I have is that parents are too demanding. Parents wanted second language taught much earlier in the first grade versus the second grade. So those cultural differences, where there is a significant emphasis on education throughout, are very powerful. That's something that we need to emphasize because it starts in the home with the parents. There's a responsibility of the student to understand it, but it's in our communities, it's in our churches, and in our synagogues, in our community centers, and it's in society at large. If I could just make one more point.
All right, go ahead.
What's also very interesting is when I travel to countries that perform very well in these international tests, like China and Japan, they say America does so much better on creativity, innovation, unstructured thinking, and problem solving. How do you teach that? How can we learn from what you're doing in your country? Well, our history and our culture of opportunities for all, where you should be afforded an opportunity based on merit, your individual will and commitment and skills, allows you to be more creative and more innovative and not just be limited by what's going to be on the examination. That's very much in the fabric of our culture, which represents a real strength of our education system, even if we don't always appreciate it.
And I think another thing is the issue of teachers. Clearly, there are some less effective teachers. So what do you think would be the best approach to the problem?
Teaching and teachers are the critical linchpins of our education system. So I think investing in our teacher preparation will be very important. I've got a sister who's a teacher in the Detroit Public Schools. When you understand the challenges that they face every day, what you realize are a number of things. As we think about investing in the teaching profession, first of all, how do we continue to attract new teachers into the profession? I think that's critical because we know that over the next 4 to 6 years, there will be about 1 million new teaching positions that will be needed as our baby boomers retire. So at a time when education couldn't be more important, there's going to be a real opportunity to invest human capital into the teaching profession. So there's an opportunity on the recruitment side to try to promote teachers to come into the profession. Things like alternative pathways where we can take teachers not just prepared in the schools of education, but who perhaps may come from industry, who may have been a physicist, who has deep technical skills and knowledge, who, if you can complement that with good classroom practices, may be an effective teacher. How do you make it easier for a broader number of teaching candidates to enter the profession? And then how do we better prepare them? frankly, we need our schools of education to continue to adapt their practices to the real requirements in the classroom. As important as pedagogy is, it's also important to understand the new tools and techniques that are going to be needed in tomorrow's classroom. Increasingly, there are digital tools. Content is becoming more digitized. We hope that there'll be more information so that teachers will have access to better assessment of individuals in terms of how and what specific material they're learning. Are they learning a certain set of materials at an accelerated rate? And are they slower at learning another? And how can they tailor their teaching practice to the individual needs of the student and use data to inform that more evidence-based teaching? How do they continue to use collaboration and partnering with their peers to say, I've got a group of students who are struggling with learning the area of a triangle. What are the different teaching approaches we might take with that student? Those kinds of approaches need to be increasingly taught so that our teachers coming into these classrooms are prepared, as well as understanding that our children are going to have a variety of different backgrounds, different language skills, and being prepared to deal with that diversity.
I've heard a complaint that the educational system is too test and diploma driven. Can we become less benchmark oriented and more learning oriented and also more creative and have that ability to use our critical thinking more effectively?
We must. The 21st century skills, these general competencies, require much more than just basic mastery of math, language arts, and science. The ability to learn, to adapt to a dynamic world and problem solve in that is what's going to be needed going forward. The pace of change is accelerating every day. And so with that, our assessment system, testing, is very important because it provides feedback to both the student and the teacher about what's being learned and absorbed effectively so that you can tailor the instruction to better address where the student is on any given topic. Two things are important. One is that the testing and the assessments need to move beyond just the basic skills so we better understand to what degree there is real understanding so it can be applied in different contexts, in a creative context, and more innovation. The second is making sure that these assessments are not merely what we call high-stakes assessments. If the student fails, then the teacher is a failure and the school gets a black mark. This should be assessment for learning. It's important that instead of just a simple end-of-the-year test, there's frequent feedback at the end of a chapter, at the end of several weeks, so that teachers are learning and students are getting feedback of what's working, what's not, so that you can adapt the teaching approach used. The goal here is to maximize learning. That's what we're trying to move towards in our testing regime in this country.
I could see that helping both the students and the teachers do a better job.
Absolutely. One of the challenges, and I think this is a frustration that many teachers, like my sister, have, is unfortunately the evaluation systems that they're subject to are not as rigorous as we would hope. They would welcome feedback. They would welcome professional development. I credit both the AFT and Randy Weingarten's leadership, who are supportive of investing in the professional development of our teaching core. And that starts with how do we actually move to a more robust definition of effectiveness? Understanding effectiveness is comprised of how well students are performing. And right now, it's based on clearly not the greatest assessment system, but it's better than none, and we need to improve it. But also, there's a whole host of tools and techniques can be used to better assess how effective a teacher is. Classroom observation, various other academic performance, be it homework assignments and peer evaluations. With that information, with the teacher's understanding, these are the things that you're effective at, these are the things that you need to grow and develop, that's the basis that then you can target training and professional development to make teachers more effective. We can identify those who are very, very effective, and like in other countries like China, perhaps they can be master teachers where they're spending much more time in a mentoring role, not just always in the classroom. And in those cases where even with consistent professional development, teachers really struggle to be effective in the classroom, it allows you the confidence to say, perhaps teaching isn't the right profession for you at this time. But you really need a clear definition of teacher effectiveness and the systems that support that geared on professional development and continuous improvement, but which ultimately allow you to identify the best and reward and develop those, as well as migrate out those that simply aren't effective teachers.
Anthony, a study by the American Management Association, our group here, in conjunction with the Partnership for a 21st Century, found that new hires entering the workforce were deficient in four critical areas: critical thinking, creativity, collaboration, and communication. What are your thoughts on that?
The way to teach those skills is in the context of the underlying content. I don't think there's a vision that there's going to be a separate course of critical thinking. But as we move to these new standards and as new curriculum is being developed consistent with those standards, this is much more of how do we make sure that that curriculum and that pedagogy allows for cooperative learning groups, has more problem-based learning exercises. The curriculum allows discussion. When it's embedded in the curriculum, this discussion group and our communication skills is how, in fact, we are going to better understand and learn the area of the triangle. It is in these cooperative learning groups that we're going to challenge one another. We use group exercises to focus on both collaboration and communication and then see the power of creativity as different groups come up with different ways to approach a problem.
And what should businesses be doing in the meantime as a stopgap to overcome these shortcomings?
I think a couple of things. One, there's a recognition that there will be a gap. We know that 25% of our young adults don't graduate high school, which is a crisis itself. We know that many of those who do graduate high school and go on to higher education, can be upwards of 30%, need some kind of remediation, even on some of the basic skills. What we're finding is that the community college system and some of our other higher ed academic institutions are often filling that gap. And so what business can do is partner with those elements of our education system to ensure that the curriculums better reflect the real skills that are needed in terms of these general competencies. So that as the higher education system works to provide remediation, we're ensuring that those skills are being reinforced so that they're going to be more college and career ready.
Can you see the corporate community doing this on a statewide basis or community basis or going directly to the federal government and trying to find ways to work with the DOE?
On a statewide basis, it's very compelling, as well as in their communities. There's been a recent initiative spawned by some collaboration with the federal government, the Skills for America initiative, where corporations are coming together and they're working with community colleges all across the country. They are working on alternative career paths and the skills curriculums required and how to collaborate with the community college systems that typically are governed at the state level. That's why the state intervention is so important to come up with some standards, because if it's relevant for company A, it generally means a company can represent an industry or a sub-industry. So it's a very effective way to bring leverage to the problem and deploy it at the state level. We see companies like IBM with some very effective models that they've piloted in New York, where they've partnered with the Department of Education, with the higher education system, and in this case, in the area of IT, to work to collaborate and develop a curriculum such that it can start as early as high school. It allows them to transition post-high school into a certificate program and a degree program that can then lead to either a career path or higher education to a two-year degree or even onto a four-year degree. And at the end of that, there's the opportunity, not a guarantee, but the opportunity to be at the front of the queue for job opportunities within IBM. It's those kinds of programs that can be deployed locally, but can be scaled at the state level.
We've been talking about companies. What about individual business leaders?
We feel very strongly that leadership matters, and it's something that the business community very much understands, and bringing the leadership that resides in the business community to the cause of how we systemically improve education in this country is very much needed. We know, for example, that as we move towards these 21st century competitive standards, as states raise their standards, our systems right now will struggle to prepare students to meet those higher standards, which will mean a significant number of students will show a gap against those standards. It's in that context that the political will can sometimes erode, because the immediate pain is more of our students are failing. And that's because we significantly raised the bar, and now we're going to have to adapt our systems to better prepare them. It is during this transition time that the business leadership needs to be active voices talking about the need to stay the course, about the importance of these 21st century skills and having our education system drive to these 21st century skills, that it's critical to our economic prosperity, it's critical to our national security, and to make sure that that voice is heard in state houses all around the country, it's heard in local communities, and it's heard at the national level, I think is critical, because systemic reform is really what's going to be needed. The second thing is CEOs are increasingly partnering on specific initiatives in education. Initiatives like Change the Equation, which has over 100 CEOs and companies represented that are collaborating on improving STEM education in this country. There's things like Skills for America, where corporations are collaborating on alternative career pathways, partnering with our community college system. There's a number of these types of initiatives where CEOs can bring their leadership to accelerate and sustain the systemic reforms that are needed.
We've been talking to Anthony Wilder Miller, Deputy Secretary for Education of the United States. Anthony, thank you so much for being here with us on Edgewise.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate it.
Are you responsible for creating online content that connects with customers? AMA's new hands-on writing program offers skills, tools, and professional instructor feedback to help you improve your online content and bottom-line results. For more information, visit amanet.org and type 2182 into the search box. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.